proceed to the fifth case, United States v. Sloan. Ms. Gambino.
Good morning, Judge Blum, Judge Cudahy, and Judge Connie. The district court in this case denied Mr. Sloan's motion to suppress evidence and statements, and this constituted a violation of his Fourth Amendment right to be free from unlawful searches and seizures. And there are three reasons for that. First of all, there was no reasonable suspicion to stop Mr. Sloan on February 2nd of 2009. There certainly was no probable cause to arrest him, nor was there probable cause to search his truck. On February 2nd of 2009, Mr. Sloan left a Harley-Davidson dealership, pulled out of the parking lot behind a Ford Explorer. The Ford Explorer contained 500 pounds of marijuana. Mr. Sloan was not to know this. There was no evidence that the agents had any prior knowledge. In fact, they admitted they had no prior knowledge about Mr. Sloan, about his truck, or about his passenger, or their potential involvement in the case.
They did ride in tandem, though, for quite a while in a very unusual route, didn't they not?
Well, the government contends that it was an unusual route and that they did follow each other. They also did admit under cross-examination that as they started out leaving, it was Lafayette, Indiana. They were traveling on main roads, and they proceeded to country roads. Now, uncharacteristically, the agents claim that they did not check the license plates of the vehicle that they were following. Had they done so, as they later learned, Mr. Sloan had that vehicle, was registered to him, and he was heading in the direction of his home. The area around Lafayette, Indiana is rural, and anyone who comes into Lafayette, Indiana and goes back to their home is going to follow both city and rural routes. So there really wasn't any evidence that this was
There's also a
unusual.
Lot of traffic on I-65, too, right?
There is. So
you might suspect that one of the members of the panel is familiar with that venue.
Yes, I got that impression. So really, while the government tries to make a lot of the route, what we essentially have here is an individual who is following behind another car who is suspected of a criminal offense. And this individual was stopped at the same time as the car carrying the marijuana. And Mr. Sloan was pulled out of the car immediately, thrown into the ditch on his face and handcuffed before they even asked him who he was. So at this point, they had no knowledge about him, about his truck, about his passenger, other than he was following this one particular car, and they cited to the fact that his passenger was talking on a cell phone and looking in the rearview mirror, looking in the visor. And anyone who's traveled with a teenager knows that this is a very common occurrence. This court has never held that lawful driving is evidence of counter-surveillance. And in fact, in the United States versus Ingrau, this court said specifically that it wasn't, that this court has held on numerous occasions that evasive maneuvering and driving circuitous routes and various things of that nature to try and evade surveillance are evidence of counter-surveillance, but not normal, lawful, and law-abiding behavior, which the agents and the state trooper who testified both conceded that Mr. Sloan's behavior, driving and occasionally looking in his rearview mirrors, was lawful and good driving practice. Mr. Sloan was not talking on a cell phone. There's no indication that the people in Mr. Sloan's car, he and his passenger, were communicating with the car in front of them. There was nothing to link the two, other than the fact that one was following the other. Affirming in this case, Your Honors, would allow the police license to stop and search anyone who ends up by hazard or by purpose simply following a car they are particularly interested in. It's simply too broad and not supported by the case law in this circuit. With respect to probable cause, there has to be first of all, some objective manifestation that the person who is stopped, the individual who is stopped, is or is about to be involved in criminal activity. And clearly, that wasn't the case here. They knew nothing about Mr. Sloan or his passenger or his truck. Simply following was all that was used to link.
But let me get back to that. We talked about the rural roads. How long, how many miles, do you know, does the record show how many miles it was until they finally pulled him over?
The record doesn't show in terms of miles. The testimony was that it was approximately 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
That they had followed one and the other.
And it was, I mean, you're not claiming that it's not true that they did not follow a straight path. They went sort of winding around.
Well, actually, I would say that it's not... they did not do a winding around path if you're measuring how he goes from Lafayette to his home. But there wasn't evidence in the record beyond the fact that they took four or five different roads to get to the T-stop where they were both pulled over.
He lives in rural Tippecanoe County?
Yes, he does. In fact, the place where the T intersection where they stopped was just a few feet from the turnoff that Mr. Sloan would take to go to his home.
Would you suggest, though, Ms. Gambino, or would you acknowledge, I should say, that this close proximity, never passing for 20 minutes, though obviously had an opportunity, I guess the testimony suggests, that kind of caravanning, if you will, doesn't raise a suspicion when, in the minds of the law enforcement officer when they do know what's in the Ford Explorer?
Your Honor, I would say that it's not accurate to say caravanning as such. And in some of these roads, I actually have driven the route as perhaps Judge Connie has.
We have two experts here.
It's not always possible nor even desirable to pass when you're driving on a particular route, particularly if you have a destination in mind and you're not in a fairly big hurry. And simply driving behind another vehicle has never been found to be sufficient to constitute probable cause.
And the activity of the passenger with this, as related at least to testimony, that constantly looking in the vanity mirror or the side mirror, I don't recall, on a rural, is that just checking the scenery behind you, I guess?
Or checking your own face. I mean, he was talking on the phone. I mean, certainly there are individuals who become preoccupied with aspects of, you know, they have something in their eye, they have a pimple on their face. You can't tell just from a person looking in the mirror
I understand it could be an innocent explanation, sure.
Right. And, Your Honors, I see that I'm heading into my rebuttal time.
Sure.
I would like to reserve.
Thank you, Ms. Gambino. Ms. Chang Adiga?
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jennifer Chang Adiga on behalf of the United States. The District Court in this case properly denied Sloan's motion to suppress. To address counsel's first argument, the agents in this case had not only reasonable suspicion but probable cause to stop Mr. Sloan and also to arrest Roger Sloan. Certainly, to begin with, the agents had probable cause to believe that there was marijuana inside the blue Ford Explorer that Mr. Sloan was following. And from that point, agents then developed probable cause to believe that Sloan was involved in a conspiracy to possess the marijuana inside that Explorer with the intent to distribute it. Now, the agent's own observations in this case led them to believe that the Explorer and Sloan's vehicle were acting in concert and that Sloan was not just an innocent motorist, as he contends. The agent's observations began from the time the blue Ford Explorer left the warehouse laden with the approximately 500 pounds of marijuana. The agents testified that it was their intent to get behind the Explorer to follow it until a marked unit could perform a traffic stop. However, before they could do so, Roger Sloan pulled out in his red pickup truck and immediately positioned himself behind that Explorer. Agents then observed as he followed that Explorer, as Your Honors pointed out, for approximately 20 minutes. And I do believe in the record, Agent Walker or Patrick testified that it was approximately 15 to 20 miles that they traveled together. During that 20 minutes, Roger Sloan was never more than one car length behind the Blue Explorer. Roger Sloan never allowed any other vehicles to come between himself and the Explorer. And Roger Sloan never passed the Explorer, even though given the opportunity on a multi-lane roadway. And importantly, Your Honors, the two vehicles traveled from the city of Lafayette through backcountry roads into what was testified was an extremely rural area, an area, Agent Walker stated, that you would not expect two vehicles to be in at the same time. In addition to all of that, the agents also made additional observations that, when viewed in light of their training and experience that they testified to, led them to reasonably conclude that Mr. Sloan and his passenger were providing counter-surveillance for the load of marijuana inside the Explorer. And the observations that led them to that conclusion were that they saw Sloan's passenger talking on the cell phone constantly during the 20 minutes that they observed them. They saw Sloan's passenger looking at them and made eye contact with them through the side mirror of the vehicle. And they saw Sloan's passenger pull down the sun visor from overhead him, even though there was testimony that it was an overcast day and there was no sun out. And the agents observed Sloan's passenger to look at them through the overhead visor mirror.
What kind of vehicle were the agents in?
The agents were in a SUV vehicle. I believe it was a Chevy Colorado, Your Honor.
So we had it was a caravan of three cars.
That's correct. That's correct. The agents testified during the suppression hearing as to their years of experience as well as their specific training that they'd undergone regarding surveillance and counter-surveillance techniques. And, Your Honor, these were techniques that they recognized Sloan's passenger as doing because they themselves exercised these techniques during investigations. Now, the appellant argues that Ingrau, decided by this court, is instructive. However, I will point out that that case is distinguishable from Sloan's case. In Ingrau, there was no link between Ingrau and the target, Gigliotti, and there was also no link between Ingrau and the location of the suspected narcotics transaction. All we had in that case, in Ingrau, was agents viewing a suspected drug transaction and then later observing a man, later identified as Ingrau, carrying a bag from that general vicinity, a bag, I will note, that was different than the bag seen during the suspected drug transaction. And I will note that Ingrau was walking down a common gangway that was accessed not only by the target's house, but by another entirely different house, and agents were unable to say where he came from. After those observations, agents saw Ingrau look both ways before crossing a street and then practice cautious driving techniques. And this court, as we know, found that there was no probable cause and reversed the district court in that case. But Sloan's case is distinguishable because the agents in Sloan's case had made observations that directly linked Sloan to the load of marijuana in the Explorer for all the reasons mentioned earlier. And the agents in our case had additional observations that made it reasonable for them to infer Sloan was engaged in counter-surveillance. Now, the appellant points to the finding in Ingrau that cautious driving cannot be considered suspicious activity absent extraordinary circumstances. And while that's factually accurate about Ingrau, it is inapplicable to the instant case. Because in our case, it was the actions of Sloan's passenger, Christopher Abney, that led the agents to the conclusion that they were performing counter-surveillance.
Agents must have read that case.
Perhaps, Your Honor. I'm not sure. But while a driver can argue that the use of mirrors is merely a safe driving practice, the passenger has no such innocent explanation for behavior in that regard. Now, I can go ahead and address the second argument, which the appellant has not addressed, if Your Honors would like, or I can rest on my brief.
You can stand on your brief.
Okay. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you. Ms. Gambino.
The second argument referenced, of course, is the argument under United States versus Arizona versus Grant. And that all requires that there be a lawful arrest. And simply there was not an lawful arrest in this case. And, in fact, the facts of Ingrau are a little bit more complicated than presented by Ms. Chang-Adiga, because in Ingrau there was informant testimony that had involved Mr. Gigliotti in drug dealing. The gangway was between the house in which the drugs were delivered to. They had information from an informant with respect to that, and they followed him as he met other individuals that the informant provided information about. And still, this court was not willing to find that there was probable cause based on his cautious driving and the lack of connection. Certainly with Mr. Sloan, there's even less of a connection, because all we have is the proximity between his truck and the Ford Explorer, and the Ibarra versus Illinois and New York versus Sibram have long held that mere propinquity or proximity is insufficient, especially when you look at a particular defendant. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Maria. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.